All right, welcome back to the North Star Method podcast, where we give you the mental skills to be at your best when it matters most. My name is Sebastian. I'm the co-founder and CEO of North Star Performance Psychology.
My name is Sean, co-founder and director of mental performance.
And on today's episode, we are bringing you our first ever guest appearance on the podcast. Let them know who you are.
What's up, guys? UFC fighter Basil the Habibi Hafez here.
The one and only. And we are going to be getting into the mental skills that go into not only fighting and being in high-pressure, high-consequence situations, but also the way that those skills translate to day-to-day life so that you can use them for yourself. That being said, what better place to start than with what your experience has been with mental skills? And maybe you can just use that as a chance to tell us a little bit about how you got in to the sport.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things that you could talk and touch on with the mental side of the sport, especially I feel like that's such a huge part of it that people overlook. But what got me into the sport was getting in trouble and really, you know, getting in trouble with fights and getting in trouble with law, and then deciding that I need to start doing something more organized. At that time, I was 18. I got in trouble, got arrested, and then my cousins were training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu at the time. And, you know, they invited me to come try it out. I think I had a confidence issue with it for the first like 6 months. And that kept me from starting for 6 months, really. And then one day I just woke up and I think I realized that, you know, I didn't want to go to college. I didn't want to do that route. I wanted to do a non-traditional route. And just said, F it, and showed up and never looked back. And since day one, it's been, I love the sport and it's changed my life and changed me as a man.
Yeah, and we've been honored to have a front row seat to a decent little portion of it. We've talked about it in the past on the pod that the way that Sean and I got our start was doing mental performance groups once a week here where we're recording today. Barways Performance Center, Englewood, Colorado. Shout out. You were one of the first fighters to join the group. You had just mentioned something. It's funny because we talked about this the other day on Reacts. It was Tom Brady talking about that he thinks he's a psychopath. He was saying that, you know, like, there's just this part of me, it's just this edge. And what we've noticed in almost all high performers is that they take something that otherwise could be very destructive in their lives and channel it into something productive. It sounds like that's been a component to your experience.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like everyone has different negative things they might experience. And it's never a competition. You never should be trying to compare to others and just accept that everyone has their own struggles and it's different levels of it. But it's about how you overcome that and how you turn into fuel. And maybe I didn't grow up the same as Tom Brady. I don't think I did. And maybe there's a lot of people that didn't grow up the same as me or as Tom Brady either. And so everyone's a unique character, their own unique experiences. And I think you can't, like, some people might take longer to have that epiphany and some people it might happen right away. Right. But eventually when you want it hard and when you want it, like you really want something bad enough, you're going to have that epiphany. It's going to make you start to understand, okay, everything that I experienced is fuel, you know, that's going to help motivate me. It's going to drive me. It's going to keep me understanding why I'm doing this whenever there's times of bleakness and times of doubt. And I think it's different for every person, like I said, but it doesn't change that you still can turn that into fuel. For me, I lost my parents at 18 to cancer, my mother at 18 to cancer, breast cancer, and my father at 21 to lung cancer. And I've experienced a lot of other things too that I'm not going to go crazy into, but like I use all that as fuel. And some people might use it as a reason to just maybe go under the rug and disappear, you know, like kind of fall off. And you can't have that mentality. You have to understand that you're still carrying, I like to say, I carry my family's name. You know, I'm one of the last of my bloodline right now in my immediate family. And what am I going to do to make sure that I can leave a mark on this world, that I can have when I do something, people look at me and say, that's Barbara's son. That's Brad's son. You know, and Badr in Arabic for the Arabic speakers. But yeah, it's something that I carry with me always. And I think about it in every situation, like how would my parents react in the situation? How would they want me to be? Should I do this? Would this be stoic or becoming of me as a man? And it's all something that's taken time. It's not something that's happened overnight. And, you know, some people it happens quicker, I feel like.
That's really interesting. Like you kind of have this guiding principle of like, what would they think? Would this be kind of an action or a behavior of the man that I would like to be almost. That's kind of a big part of our work is identifying like, this is your best self. These are the characteristics, the traits of who I am and my best. Maybe I'm confident. Maybe I'm composed. Maybe I'm giving, no matter what it might be. And kind of having that guiding principle can be really important. We talk about these traits and you've risen the ranks you've been fighting for a while, but you know, obviously from lower level now to the highest level that you can be, you've probably worked with a lot of different fighters. What is the biggest kind of difference between those who make it and don't, you think?
Perseverance. Yeah. And having, I think I heard it from Dustin Jacoby, shout out to him. You know, you gotta have bulletproof confidence. Like, you can't allow any negative things that happen to you to tear you down or to like belittle how you really feel about yourself. Cause there's always gonna be things happening, right? It's not just about what you've been through, right? To use as fuel, as fuel. It's not about just what you've been through before to use as fuel. It's about what you experience constantly, daily. You know, and so if I have bulletproof confidence, I'm not gonna let something break me or shake me or make me feel like I don't deserve to be where I'm at just because of one slip up, one loss, one mistake. And then also same thing, that takes perseverance to be able to withstand the bad things, withstand the negative times, withstand all the doubters, whatever it is, you know, in your life, you have to be able to persevere through that. And I feel like, I remember as a kid, I don't know if they did the same thing at your elementary schools. They used to give those character awards at my elementary school. I think I got perseverance like every single time. I was the most hard-headed kid then, and I still am to this day. It's just I channel it into the right thing, you know, like my ADD, ADHD, I channel that into the right things to be able to use it beneficially for my life and for my sport. And so it's the same thing with anything. You have to find the ways to make it work, and definitely perseverance and bulletproof confidence.
Bulletproof confidence, I love that term. And I have one question about that. You said, like, you don't let any of the negative things kind of keep you down. Obviously, this is easier said than done. So I guess when a negative thing happens, having the right perspective, the right mindset of how to kind of view it, how to interpret it is the most important thing. When you are in this bulletproof kind of state, if you will, how do you view a negative thing that happens to you?
The same way I would view it any other situation. I think when I say bulletproof confidence, it doesn't mean that you are indestructible, right? Because it's not about like pushing things under the rug. Right. It's there was the passive aggressive versus
assertive.
Assertive, right? Was it the guy who goes every day and yells at the cashier and lets his anger out instantly, and the cashier just takes it, and then one day the cashier comes in and shoots the whole place up, you know? It's like you can be passive or you can be instant anger, but it's all about controlling it either way. And so like if you're a person that's passive more, it can still affect you in a bad way. Like anything, you do it enough, you allow the wrong things to be passive with, it's going to just build up. It's not going to just be forgotten. And so for me, I feel like the most important thing is just to like take a second to understand what just happened, what you experienced, and then how do I overcome this the best way I can? That's bulletproof confidence. It may seem like on the outside that you are invincible, right? And that you don't feel anything, but we feel things every day. And I think a lot of people have that inner battle, like, well, I'm going through this, and what's the name's not going through that, or are they even going through anything? And so many people just hide that. It's like it's a big thing. You just kind of, in a way, hide it because you don't want to show other people, right? It's you could have your family, yourself, or you got to figure out your dog. I mean, everyone has different things that they can be themselves with, right? Or moments where they can be themselves in their life. And it's not about showing that to everyone, right? It's not about releasing your emotions at every single moment. So I think a lot of times, like, kind of being subdued and holding on to it, then sometimes you realize that, oh, I am going to react in a better way than I would have if I would have just snapped at that moment. Or if I'm going to be more passive, then it's like, okay, well, I'm going to be passive, but I'm also going to try and construct this in a positive way so that it's not just constantly me being passive and it's just building up, right? You know? So definitely like controlling your situations, controlling your outcomes and your mood and how you react to things, right? It's like, it's not about if everything's going to offend you, right? But it's about how you react to them, right? How you respond and what you do after that. Mm. If I answer the question exactly.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a perfect segue because what you're touching on is the absolute core of what we do and what we want people to understand. The two main tenets of the North Star Method: self-awareness, self-regulation. And you put it very well, saying, look, you're going to encounter things. You're going to have a reaction. Do you have the awareness to notice that reaction and the patterns in it, how I tend to react in this situation with this person in this conversation? And then self-regulation, do I get to make an intentional decision about how I'm going to act on that emotion? And that right there is the unlock to not just succeeding like in your sport or in your performance, but it's how you make the most of life and how you turn those things that we otherwise wish had never happened to us into meaningful fuel. There's a connection that Certainly anybody who's watching that's in the field has already made, and I know it's in your head too, Sean. It's, you know, you talk about perseverance, and it's like, well, yeah, of course. But the reason for the perseverance is that you've clearly defined a why. Like, there's this value of, like, legacy.
Yeah,
it's, I want to carry this name on. I want to represent my people in a certain way.
It's also just not comparing to others, you know, like, it's not about just, it's having that confidence, but a lot of times we get lost, and people have that. A lot of people have, they're like really put down to it, maybe in a situation where they feel less pressure to be open. They will say they have confidence in themselves, right? It's not that a majority of people don't have confidence, it's that they have too much of a comparison mindset, and that's what steals their confidence, right? It steals their joy. And they say, it's an old saying that comparison is the biggest thief of joy. Exactly. And it's because you're never going to be happy if you're always finding someone to compare to, because that person, you're going to reach that point, then you can compare to somebody else. And then your whole life is going to be a chasing battle of am I ever going to be happy? Because I'm so focused on what other people are doing, you know?
So what's that balance like for you in terms of, obviously, you know, you're really still, even as far as you've come, just getting started, and there's so much more that you want to do. How do you balance that hunger and drive to do more with also being like, hey, like, I'm happy to be here. I can still be present.
I mean, just valuing where I came from, what made me chase this goal and this dream to begin with. I never am really satisfied. I feel like I can always be better. Not with a comparison to somebody else. Just, I know I can always do better, right? If I do something and I go out there and maybe I get a submission flying triangle in 10 seconds. You know, I have had very quick submissions and, you know, things other people haven't done when I was an amateur. I still would be upset with myself. Oh, I wasn't there long enough because I didn't do this, you know, or I could have done this better. Or maybe the way I put my hips in, you know, somebody else would have got out of that, you know. And it's keeping myself grounded with just accepting, look, we're human. I'm not perfect. I'm not going to be John Jones, but I'm also not going to be Joe Schmo on the street. You know, I'm my own person. As long as I continue to be happy with the product I put out there, or be happy with the result, like whether it's in the cage or in life or people around me, you have to just kind of bring yourself back down to earth, ground your feet, understand that you're only human. Everyone's in their own situation. And I'm going to compare, okay, with what I expected I was going to do, not with what I thought, you know, A, B, and C would do. So I just kind of keep myself grounded with that. Like, you know, remember my goals, remember why I got into this, understand that I'm not perfect, and just try and have a positive mindset, really, the best I can.
It's interesting, the kind of climbing up from just where you started to where you're at now. Obviously, things are probably different and better in a lot of ways. We also notice that, like, this journey of mental performance, as we call it, is kind of ongoing and new challenges present themselves. What are kind of the biggest differences in terms of the challenges you face, whether it is mental, physical, spiritual, whatever, based on where you're at now and maybe when you were just getting into pro fighting or even as an amateur?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely, like, the experiences change and the struggles change. Nothing is ever going to be the same throughout that. I think I've been training for 14 years. So when I first got in, it was, like, obviously not knowing a lot, and then having that battle of staying confident, staying driven, staying, you know, I'm going to stay with the sport, even though I think I might suck, you know, some days. Or I'm like, dude, I'm a bum compared to this guy. This guy just got into it. And comparison thing. And so I kind of just, I definitely focus on the right things. I like, sorry, I lost the question. Fucking it. Started going on something else and then I just.
No, you're good. I was just thinking, like, biggest differences, like, or how the kind of struggles have changed.
Okay. Yeah. There was. Okay. So the way the struggles have changed definitely, it's in the beginning, it was more mental on the, like, but confidence side and being able to stick with it and understand that, you know, my level isn't going to stay that way. And a lot of people get, like, you know, they go have a good sparring round, they have a good jiu-jitsu round, and they get, you know, their confidence completely shook, and they say, oh, is this even right for me? And it's that in the beginning, it's not a lot of that. Then it becomes more of the physical side, because you're trying to make sure that you're in the right shape and, you know, if you have the right drive to be able to continue training as hard as you can every single day, even while you have long shifts at work right afterwards. And then now it's towards the latter half of my career, it's the mental side is, like, I feel like kind of forged my mental mind, like the right mindset and the mental capacity I need to be amazing at this sport. But it's like now the physical, right, is a tougher part. I mean, my knees are going or my whatever's happening. And it's just, that's always the way it is. So it's like, like anything, there's always going to be a battle, whether you have it in the beginning or the end. There's always going to be the year and a half. This battle at this point, it's never just going to be smooth sailing. And, like, even if it is, then good for that person. That's not you, you know, like it,
yeah.
Just accept that and move on. And then at that point, you just got to make the best out of your situation. And then to understand, like, there's going to be a battle. Same when you go to college and you start a new career, there's battles at every single point of that. And it's like, damn, the beginning of my career, I had this battle, and now I'm not even stressed about that, but now I'm stressed about this. Mm. That's life. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. And there's actually, there's one fight I had a question about in terms of how you dealt with it. It was often called the biggest robbery in the UFC. I'm sure you know that what I'm kind of referring to. Versus, I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's last name, to be fully honest.
Jack Della Maddalena.
Maddalena, that's what
JDM.
JDM. First of all, as much as you can speak to this, how do you think it should have went, and how did you deal with the results?
I mean, I do think I should have won on the rules. I wasn't the happiest.
You could also explain to the audience maybe what had exactly happened if they...
So, okay, I'll just give a little background.
Yeah.
I'm going to end up giving too much background. All right, so...
Sorry.
I took the fight on 3 days' notice. I was not in shape at all. I had a motorcycle accident like 5 weeks before that where I had fractured my wrist and got road rash, totaled my motorcycle completely. And then I couldn't train physically. Couldn't train for 5 weeks. And then the sixth week was the Friday before the fight. So, yeah, first day back of sparring. I remember, like, looking at, like, pictures of myself, like, on July 4th, right? And the fight happened on July 15th. But on July 4th, I was, like, completely soft-bodied, out of shape, barbecuing with my friends. Like, I was not in fight shape at all. And so then fast forward, I'm getting healthy again. And then I get this call on Monday night from my manager. And I was here at Barwis, actually, in the middle of the strength conditioning class. And I was like, all right, I'm doing it. And then at that point, it was, like, the next day I flew out. I started the weight cut process. I mean, I was 30 pounds over, so it was a 30-pound weight cut from Monday night till Friday morning.
My God.
Yeah, it was crazy. So, like, I did a lot of things. I'm not going to – if I had a camera crew, I think I would beat the one that Charles Oliveira had where he went viral.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, mine was a religious experience. Like, it was crazy, right? God. I think anybody seeing it would be like, yo, this guy can't fight. He can't even stand up. I was bad. So, I mean, got to the point where a little tidbit. So I was so out of it where I had to pee really bad. I realized it was like right before I left the final bit of the weight cut to go to the weigh-ins. And we don't know if I'm on weight really. At this point, we're just like, it's like, this gets to a point you run out of time and they're like, you have to weigh in now or the fight's off, you know, commission based, all that. You have to do that. So, and then it's like, okay, well, we don't know. We're technically not on weight, but we might lose it if we turn the heat up in the car on the way there and we have you doing this and maybe you go to the bathroom and yeah, there's a bunch of stuff. That's right. And this happens a lot. And all throughout the country and the world every day in this sport, which is weird. But we get to the point, we get to the UFC Apex. I miss weight. I'm 171.6. The most I can be is 171.1.
Always.
So I'm 0.5 off. And that 0.5, half pound, basically.
So what around, is that for the fight, like, in terms of, like,
so
how you go
at this moment, I miss weight. So I can't even rehydrate yet. I can't do anything because they're like, all right, are you going to miss weight or are you going to try and make the weight? At this point, I'm making my debut. My manager told me that it's like, yo, you have to make weight. You told him you're going to make weight. It's a big deal if you got to make the weight. I'm like, all right, I'm going to make the weight. So I step up the scale. I'm like, I'm going to try and make the weight. They're like, all right, well, you have to do all this stuff first now. You got to go do the face-offs, official face-offs first. Then you got to go talk to the commission. They got to approve it. And then you can go cut the weight. And then everybody knows when you're like depleted, like I was like, I couldn't even stand. I forgot I had to pee. And I had to pee the whole time.
That would have helped the weight.
That would have made. So I go do the face-offs. I go see the doctors. They clear me. I'm like, they're like, all right, we got to start the weight cut. I'm like, oh, I got to pee so bad. I just remembered I had to pee. And they're like, what? Dude, come on. We got to start the weight cut. We're running out of time. I'm like, no, I got to pee before anything, bro. I've been holding this in. And it just hit me. And so I run to the bathroom. I pee a lot. Like, I pee a good amount. I come out. I'm like, yo, I think I'm on weight. And they're like, no fucking way. There's no way you just feed out 0.5 ounces, bro. I'm like, no, I think I'm looking
a whole liter.
Yeah, like I peed a lot. So they're like, all right, whatever. Let's make sure we can check. It was like a whole logistical thing. We got to make sure I can weigh in more than once and keep checking. Or if it's once I weigh in once, this like second time, it's over.
Yeah.
So they're while they're doing that, I'm like, no, I don't care. I'm good. I'm charging at the scale. I step on the scale, 171.1.
Oh,
I was like, damn.
That's unbelievable.
So I made weight. And then, so I go to the official scale. And I'm like, 171.1, it's going to be 171. Doesn't move it off. It's a metal scale, metal tilting scale. So that's what it depends on right now. It's not an official electronic one.
Sure.
So I go, I step on the scale behind the curtains after everything's like finished up, basically, because I was like way past after everyone did the face-offs.
Yeah.
He shouts, 171. I'm in butt naked, mind you. I get out of, I jump out of the curtain and I'm like, yes, I'm butt naked. Everyone was like, what? Yeah, I remember my corner was like, yo, what are you doing, bro? Get back. It's all like shiz. And
It's almost an exposure.
dude, all the fighters, the whole card's back there because they just had the face-offs. Now they're snacking and eating. The UFC gives you stuff. So everyone's there. It was funny as shit.
That's
But
so
so
funny.
I made weight and then I started to rehydrate at that point and I just was like bad, man. I ended up like just sitting. I was sitting in the where they have the Apex shows. It's like a concrete area where they people don't know how it's set up, but it's like the Apex and then they have the face-offs and then it's like in between area. It's like well, you can just say set up chairs and tables. And I'm literally sitting in the chairs just pouring liters of water on my head to cool myself down because I still was like messed up from the weight cut. I
Yeah.
still was like unable to get up and just walk normal. And so I'm sitting there and they're just mopping around me. I'm pouring like probably about like 7 bottles, 7 liters just over and over again on my head. Eventually, like an hour passes, like, all right, we got to get out of here. I finished like a lot of my rehydration protocol and I literally, as soon as I get to turn the corner to leave, just projectile throw up right there in the PI. Yeah. So I'm like looking around. They're like, you're good, bro. I'm like, oh, my bad. I go to leave. I do it again in the parking lot. And now I'm like, oh, I think I'm good. I think I'm good. And then boom, third one. 3 times I threw up, and then I'm like, all right, I just need to get new rehydration stuff. So they're like, are you good to fight? I'm like, yeah, just get. So I tell them, like, they go get me rehydration stuff again. I had to do it all over again. Now I'm like trying to recover, man. I'm like feeling the effects of the weight cut. My throat's sore. My it hurts to like, take deep breaths. My chest is sore. But I mean, I'm fighting. I'm not pulling out of this fight. So 24 hours, next day comes around. I go, I have the fight of the night, fight of the month, even in the UFC. I thought I won. On the judges' scorecards, basically, like how the rules said of MMA. I didn't do great in the third round. Definitely wasn't a 10-8 because there was, I took him down. You can't be a 10-8 if you take somebody down in that round. Plus, it wasn't like I was completely out of it. But regardless, I won the first 2 rounds on the rule set. So, but it doesn't matter. I lost on paper and move on. And then, so after the fight, now I leave to go to the backstage area. I'm like, you know, he beat the crap out of me in the fifth, in the third round. So, my face is really messed up, and I'm like, all right, let's go to the hospital, make sure I haven't, don't have a concussion or anything. So I go to the hospital. As soon as I get there, they're like, yeah, let's check you in. They do the CAT scan. They're like, yeah, you're fine. There's no concussion, which I ate an insane amount of punches. So to not have a concussion was one thing. But then they were like, but there's other stuff going on. They're like, you have oxygen around your esophagus, like in your muscles, around your arteries. You have oxygen around your heart and around your lungs too. And they're like, what could that could lead to is you could have a stroke if it moves the wrong way. I'm like, what?
Oh
I'm
my
like, are you
God.
sure? I'm like, nah, I just had a bad weight cut. I've done this before. Not like this bad, but
Yeah.
like I kind of felt something like this before. To like, no, but you gotta stay now. Now I gotta stay overnight. I'm on a water fast. I didn't even get to eat after
Jesus.
the fight. And now my coaches and their flights and everything, they can't change it. The UFC didn't change it, so now I'm by myself in the hospital overnight.
Oh
And
my God.
yeah, it was whatever, but it was cool. I mean, I got to see all the news and everything, fight of the night, fight of the month,
Yeah,
this
that's
and that. I'm
cool.
reading about it afterwards, so it's a little bit of enjoyable. And then
Wow.
the cardiologist comes in the next day and basically tells me he has no idea how it happened because I'm explaining like, yo, is it this pain I'm feeling here? He's like, yeah, I'm like, that's from the weight cut. He's like, I don't see how that would physically make any sense. I'm like, what do you mean? Like that's what this pain is from. If you're saying that what you kept me here is for, like for that. I don't know. Basically, they couldn't figure it out. And so I just left and never really knew. And then, yeah.
So no clarity.
So, okay. What I found out, it was a girl that I like talked to for a little bit. She's like in the medical field and she gave me this breakdown that was like much more crazy scientifically coherent than what the doctor said. And basically, because how much I deteriorated my body and broke down, like not my cell walls, but like the inner, I don't know the word for she used, but the mitochondria either, something about like the things that like connecting your muscle tissue and everything. So like basically I got so deteriorated and so depleted that I just basically dried them out and that's what allowed oxygen to pass through when I was like doing sauna breaths, like all that stuff. And like, yeah, that's what led to that happening, which is like, okay, never weight cutting like that ever again. It changed my whole life, bro. It's
Wow.
my diet, everything.
Well, it's also like such a unique situation getting the fight like so soon. You don't usually what, 8 weeks for a fight camp?
Usually at least 6 weeks. I mean,
Yeah.
my last one was the shortest I ever had, and I was like 5 to 6 weeks.
Yeah. And then also considering the nerves that might have been there, it was your UFC debut. And, you know, having kind of a shitty preparation, if you will, like, I mean, comparatively to what you would have done going into that fight, kind of barely making the weight, really, really breaking yourself down to cut all the weight and thinking, this is my first fight. I got to go out there and do what I can. What were the nerves like? What was the mindset like at that point, if you can remember?
Yeah, I mean, the nerves were crazy, man. It was like, yeah, so many things. I mean, I've dealt with being hospitalized before. I dealt with being with injuries. I dealt with bad weight cuts. And it was kind of just like, just added on the pile. Like, added on the pile. I'm not in shape. I'm fighting a guy who I looked up to at the time. Like, I already knew who he was and was a fan of him.
Yeah.
I just kind of went in on a game plan. That's it. Went in on a game plan and just tried to execute it. But no preparation, not in shape, horrible weight cut that hospitalized me after the fight. There was a lot of things that were going against me, but I didn't allow that to, like, I got here for a reason. You know, I'm where I dreamed of being. Like, I could be constipated with hemorrhoids, but I'm not going to show you. You know, I'm not going to show that. It's just, you can't let, like, whatever you're going through and whatever you just experienced or whatever is, like, might be holding you back. Like, you can't show that. If I was showed, like, if JDM would have known I was out of shape or known anything like that, if I showed any kind of weakness, he would have took advantage of it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just about, you don't need to show weakness. You can just hide all that. As it goes back to the things before, is like, you can experience negative things. You don't need to wear the emotions on your face. You don't need to wear them on your sleeve and show everyone. You can experience everything you've experienced in solidarity and still put out a great product and let everything that you've experienced fuel you to put out that product. And then later on, you could talk about, well, I wasn't even 100% or I was this and I've been that. Or you don't have to. You can just say, I'm just never going to talk about it. Yeah. But at the end of the day, no one is going to pay attention to that. No one's going to pay attention or care for your excuses, for the reasons why you do it, until after you do it. Right? You can't go into something with, I got this, I got that, I got that. Everyone's got this and that, A, B, and C, and all the way to Z. But are you going to perform? Are you going to still make the best out of your circumstances, you know? And so that's all it's about. You can talk about it later. You can reminisce and you can maybe, you know, have a therapy session and really release that. But you can't let it control what you're going to put out there. If I would have let it do that to me, then I wouldn't have had the fight of the night. I wouldn't have had fight of the month. I wouldn't have been the only guy to really beat him in the UFC. I would have let my mental control everything and I would have put a shitty performance out there.
You think about, like, I like to call it, like, mental compartmentalization. Like, sometimes there is all of this shit that is legitimate. Like, legitimate stressors that might be worth worrying about. But right now, is this going to help me? Is thinking about this going to assist my performance? I'm here to beat this guy up. And keeping this in the front of my mind is not going to help me do that. Let me compartmentalize it for the moment, then revisit it when I need to revisit it. It's a skill that probably, whether formally or informally, needs to be trained a little bit.
I think it's one of the most underestimated skills, compartmentalizing. I think people have there's a negative connotation, like a really big negative connotation with that, but it's so false. Like anything, it's how you use it. Like sodium, you use too much of it, you can die. You can get a heart attack, high blood pressure. But you use the right amount of it, you could fucking make it through sports without cramping and feel great. And da-da-da. Like anything, compartmentalizing can be used in the proper way and you can abuse it and make it a bad thing. And like you said, that's such a key thing that I think, I didn't focus that I do is I didn't realize I do it as much as I'll literally, if something bothers me or something that's like, I hate this, I compartmentalize it until I can talk about it. I don't compartmentalize it forever. It's not gone because it's always going to be there in the back of my mind. I realize that. Yeah. And the sooner you realize like that it's like, you can compartmentalize, forget about it, put under the bridge, whatever. But unless you work past it at some point, it's always going to be in the back of your mind. That might cause you to snap on your friends. That might cause you to overreact in situations and do things that you regret doing later. But as long as you accept it's there, and it's like when it gets close to the topic, you're like, oh, whoa, there's a fence around it. So I know you're getting close. Like, hey, this isn't a good topic for me. All right, I don't want to talk about this. All right, let's change the subject. These are all things that you have that fence up around that compartmentalization. It still is there. Maybe you don't have to talk about it then, you know? And the same thing applies with anything that happens in the fight beforehand, leading up to it. I compartmentalize all that. And I can talk about it later. You know, I go out there and I die in a cage. No one hears about it. I die with glory, you know? But like in reality, that's such an underestimated skill. Like being able to do that and do it like over and over again, but control how much you're doing it with. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you made a great point there that I really want to highlight because a lot of what has happened in psychology, especially with just the whole mental health side of things, is we've taken stuff and we've said good, bad, case closed. And just like you said, the truth is, you know, it's like sodium. It's like a knife. Knives are used to save lives in surgery. And yeah, they're used to chop people up. It's all about how you use it And one theme that you find again and again in the high performers is that they know how to use the stuff that is normally seen as bad productively. What I'm really wondering now is, or the thing that stood out to me as you talked about this experience, is just like the energy as you talk about it is like, there's like gratitude, enthusiasm, and I'm sure there, of course, are other emotions around it. But like, for the people out there listening to this and being like, man, if that was me, I would be devastated. You know, I'd be there in that hospital bed by myself. And now here he is talking about it with all this kind of levity and clarity. Was that something that you had in the moment? Was that something you had to process to get to after? Or how could other people do that?
I feel like I've always had like, practice with anything. You got to practice it. It takes time. You're never going to become better overnight. You're never just going to like wake up one day and like, oh, I got this. It's never going to be that way. And that's like anything else, like martial arts, like skills, they take time. You have to hone them and craft them. And like something I've always had that my mother taught me and that I feel like is very important that I noticed. And I think like more than ever now, as we've gotten older, it's something that I value more like so much is like, no matter what she was going through, she always would smile. She always like show positivity. She could be going through, like she had cancer most of my life. She had breast cancer when I was around like 7 or 8, then was in remission for maybe, she was in breast cancer stage 2 or stage 3. She had a mastectomy, then a double mastectomy, which is enough reason for any woman to be negative the rest of her life. It's horrible, right? I mean, if anyone knows what a mastectomy is, it's where they basically remove your breasts completely. If you're not someone that believes in getting a breast implant, you know, then you're basically stuck like that for the rest of your life. And so to go through that, like she would never show that, you know, and like she was in remission for 1.5 years and then the cancer came back and it was like stage 4 for 4.5 years, almost instantly. But she never once showed that she was weak or tired or upset or like that she had to go to chemo and radiation at 8 a.m. and then go work a 12-hour shift at the pizza shop with my dad. Never once even dawned on her. These are all things I realized later on. And I'm like, man, to carry all that weight and always, no matter what, have a positive mindset towards us, smile towards us. Like, I learned like a lot from that. Like, people don't care about what you're going through. One. And two is it doesn't matter what you're going through because you still have to exist as a human on this earth. And so if what I want is to be positive and be happy, right? Maybe I'm not a big people person, but I want the people that I care about to be doing well, right? The best I can do is not share my pain and show it on my face and bring that when I come in the room. I can bring a positive energy because that's what I want to have. I don't need to have everyone know what's going on in my life. It doesn't need to be a sob story. I think there's too much of a, we need to have everyone know what's going on in our lives. We need to have everyone feel bad for us and know our full story. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Once you understand that, that really doesn't matter. Not that it doesn't matter, like no one cares. People care. People around you care. You know, it does matter whatever you're going through. But in the scheme of life, it doesn't matter because you still have to go out there and drive your car, put the product out, go to work, you know, eat your food, drink water. You have to do all these things regardless of what you feel inside. And so, like, I think I learned that from her. Just sometimes I show it, but most times I try not to. Like, I might be going through the worst possible shit. Like, after my last fight, when I got knocked out, I was depressed. I was super depressed. Like, borderline almost suicidal. It was bad, you know, and I didn't share that to people around me. A lot of people wouldn't have known. I had a couple of people I could talk to, you know, a couple people I could confide in that helped pull me out of that. Like, you know, this happens in your career and yada, yada. But, you know, overall, I just kept a positive mindset. I kept like, this is what I want it to be. This is what I want to turn it into. And yet I soaked in that hatred and that obsession a little bit with, you know, the loss and this and that. But then I realized it's just another bad thing that happened to me in life. Like, all the other bad things. And if I get hung up on them, then I wouldn't be where I'm at. And the same thing, if I get hung up on this, then I'm not going to get anywhere past that. You know, it's always going to hold on to my mental.
That's gold. Rewind that, click that, put that out.
Chat, clip that.
We have gone, the pendulum has swung. It was always feel nothing, pretend everything's okay. Now it's tell everybody everything and everything's about your feelings. And you're ahead of the curve because you're saying, look, I have an emotional experience. It's not the definition of my life. And I had a role model for how to do that. And so in many ways, your mom was ahead of the curve too. And clearly that has shaped the mindset that has helped you get to where you are now. So it's just a beautiful thing to hear. And we appreciate your sharing. I also want to do a quick...
Oh, good to hear you say that too. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think about her in positive lights like that. Yeah.
It's beautiful to say, like, especially touching on your value of legacy. Like, that's part of legacy, right? It's not just like what you do going forward, it's like carrying out the values that they instilled in you and showing it to all the young fighters that are watching this and who are looking up to you. You know, they can pull from that. You also mentioned the pizza shop, and then earlier off camera we were talking to your brother as a pizza shop that kind of got passed down too.
You want to shout out shout out Westchester Pizza Cafe in Westchester, right next to Westchester University off Neild's. You guys make sure you get out there. Westchester Pizza Cafe. I think there's another one with Westchester Pizza, this and that. Make sure it's Pizza Cafe.
Pizza Cafe.
But yeah, no, I mean, he was, we took different routes. You know, we used to get in fights all the time growing up. And I think the reason I'm a fighter is because he used to beat my ass. My parents beat my ass too a little bit growing up. You know, I was a bad kid. But I don't hold that against them. And so, like, with him, he's different. He went to college. I didn't go to college. Then he ended up dropping out of college. And now, like, as I'm later, I'm like, maybe I'll go to school again and get my degree. And then he ended up, like, getting, just basically obsessed with the craft. He always worked with my parents closer than I did. Like, he was the older kid. Older son in an Arab household is, like, godsend. And the youngest is, like, the troublemaker. And it always ends up being that way. I don't know why.
How my family was.
Sorry. So a lot of people experience the same thing. And, like, for him, he got along great with my parents. So he always worked with them. And he ended up just taking in after that craft, too. And after he left college, he went to just work full time in like high-end pizza shops, like understanding and getting, he wanted to get better at that craft because I think he just always wanted to stay in the restaurant industry. And, you know, one day it was like, I remember I visited him, like I had pizza at his spot that he was cooking at. And I'm like, dude, this is the best pizza I ever had. He's like, yeah, man, I've been working on it because we had periods where we didn't talk a little bit for a couple of years. And, you know, siblings go through that sometimes. And sadly went through it. And I remember I didn't see him for a little bit because he was just grinding. Like I was grinding in my own thing. And I was like, damn, this pizza is really good. You got to open your own spot. He's like, yeah, I'm planning on it. And then like now he opened up his own spot and he's killing it. And, you know, he's making really good food. He does everything from scratch and like does it the proper way. And yeah, I'm definitely, it's like, I'm proud brother. Cause it's something like I would be happy to do too. Like making from scratch, good quality stuff.
For sure.
Yeah. But, yeah, he took over in the pizza after the pizza shop. And then I took after in no way. No one in my family's a fighter. I have one cousin.
I don't know. It sounds like your mom was a fighter.
She was a fighter in her own way. She hated violence, but if we could test the toughness and the pain tolerance that she had, she was one of the toughest people I ever met. For like, but she hated violence. They hated violence. They would not like me fighting.
So I do have a hard stop in like a few minutes here, but I do want to ask one more question to you in terms of the mental performance side of things. If you were to give advice to a young up and coming fighter, or just athlete in general, or just a young man or person trying to, you know, reach their heights, reach their goals, whatever, what advice would you give them in terms of like how to think about the mental game, how to think about their mind and psychology throughout this journey? I know when I was a kid and I was a young athlete, I thought this was all stupid. Like I thought psychology was if you're, you know, crazy and there was no reason to think about it if you were okay or normal. Obviously, I don't think that now. If you were to tell like your younger self something in terms of that, if you will, what would you say?
Oh man, there's so many things I would tell my younger self. I think the best advice I can give it's different for every kind of sport. For a fighter, I would say the mental side is a big part of it. Like be able to control what you do in that cage is not just going to be something that just like you just know it's going to happen. You don't know until you have that fight where you're like, wow, this is the first fight that I was coherent the whole time. And I hear my coaches and that comes from experience, you know. In the beginning, it's going to feel like a street fight every time. And it's going to feel like a separation of mental and physical, you know, like one is fight or flight. And you're not thinking about what you're doing. And I think like the biggest mistake I made as a fighter was maybe going to pro too early or trying to like, focus on the paydays too early instead of focusing on becoming a good fighter.
Interesting.
More than anything, getting as many fights as I can, not like just have bad fights and get knocked out over and over again. And it's not for you, you know. But ideally, you have the right matchups. Like a friend of mine, I was talking to him, and you know, he made his debut against a guy who was 2-0. I'm like, that's bad guidance. Whoever was like telling you that was okay, you got to fight somebody your level. You fight the tough guys. You have those tough fights once you can gain some experience. You know, like so. I think. Just get as much experience as you can so that the product you put out there is what you really want to do. Because I know a lot of fighters will go out there and, oh, I didn't want to do that. I didn't mean to do that in a fight. Or I wanted to do this, but what? I remember an example one time. It was like middle of my pro career, maybe like four or five fights before I got to the UFC, and I had a pro regional fight, main event. I went out there. It was a fight after I'd been out for a year and a half with injuries, and you know, I showed stuff that I didn't show before, like comfortability and staying on the feet and striking and not just shooting a takedown instantly. And I remember I went to my coach after, we're walking back to the locker room, you know, after, you know, celebrate in the cage and now you're leaving, it's the quiet area and you're heading back to change and everything. And I turned to him and I said, man, I wanted to do this. And he said, hey, stop right there. I don't want to hear you wanted to do this. Then do it. You either do it or you don't do it. You got to try it in the fight or you don't try it. And you can't just keep saying, I should have done that, or I would have done that. Next time I'm going to do this, or I wish I could. No, you have to do it. That's the hard, uncomfortable work that it's like a lot of fighters don't realize they have to do is in the cage while you're in there. Like, and then sometimes, oh, I did this and I got caught, I got knocked out. Then you learn from it and then you get better at it. But it's like, we're scared to put that sword to you know, pull that sword from the sheath and be able to, you know, use it and beat on it or mess the sword up. I don't want to mess my sword up. I don't want to bend it. I don't want to make it dull. Well, you got to work on it to get better. You're going to go through times if it gets a little dull, you get hurt, you lose, you have an embarrassing performance, whatever it is that is your dull sword. But then you're going to sharpen it and it's going to be fucking stronger than it was the first time. And it's going to just be rinse and repeat until you feel that's really what it takes to become a good fighter. Like, yeah, you have to persevere. You have to have the mental side. But you have to get good at fighting, you know? And I think a lot of guys rush it too much. So don't rush it. Take your time. Focus on improving the mental part as a fighter. Obviously, physical is number one. Physical is number two required. Like, you can't be a fighter and not be in shape, you know?
Of course.
So you gotta be in shape. You gotta work your ass off. You can't work your ass off in training, then you're never gonna be able to do the things you think about doing in the fight. Because by the time it wants to happen or it can happen, you're too tired to execute it. So definitely train your ass off. Work your ass off strength conditioning. Don't be scared to get tired. You know, like, look for that tired feeling. Face it. Like, feel like shit, because it's better than it happening in the cage. It's better than it happening in front of thousands of people, you know? Yeah, there's a lot of things, honestly. But, like, I'm going to try and cut it short then.
No, well, you know, the number one complaint we get about the podcast is, There was so much good stuff I couldn't keep up. So this one,
I want to shorten this editor.
Yeah, we're going to have you on again.
So I would say that for young fighter, the most important things are going to be make sure that you are persevering. You're staying with your training. You're staying on all the hard work that's in your workouts too. You can't be getting lazy. You can't be scared to get tired in your workouts. You can't be scared to be like huffing and puffing like you're going to be out of breath like you've never been. You have to feel that so that you don't feel in the cage. And the other thing is you have to work on those mental things, the mental part of what I want to do in the cage. You got to do it during training and then you have to do it in the cage. And if you don't do it in the cage, you can continue to say, I want to do it. But no, you got to actually act on it.
Yeah, it's an intentionality, right? It's like, you know, these are the things you think about, like mental skills that go into this, like visualization, for example. You want to kind of, you hear fighters talk about this all the time. It's like a great example. There's a great clip of, I think McGregor was like, I knew his right hand was going to like be his downfall. He puts too much into it. You can escape and kind of like get in from there, whatever. Kind of seeing these things before they happen, preparing for each of these moments and how you're going to capitalize, how you're going to respond both to like openings and opportunities as well as challenges. And when shit hits the fan, how am I going to respond? Rather than just like, I mean, you have a plan to get fucking punched in the face.
I agree with that. And I also think like some people may hear the Conor thing and go, oh, he just studied film. But you got to look deeper into that. He said that because he had conviction, right? He had conviction because he practiced it so much. He's like, I know this is going to land because of how he physically is. He didn't just watch film and go, oh, his right hand's always down at this point. And people might think that of it. No, it's you got to have conviction in what you're doing. You got to go in there and know, okay, I'm doing this. I'm not going to freeze up. I'm throwing this thing whether he likes it or not. I'm going to find it.
Yeah, who's out there? That was a wild thing, that clip, and like how he just essentially called the fight. But I guess that's what you got to do. Like you have to will it. You have to manifest these.
That's like, you know, you see guys sometimes say, I'm going to take him down and submit him because they know his grappling isn't that good. You know, like, all right, now I know I need to practice this to hit the takedown. I know if I get here, I can work on this. Now I got to work in this position to practice hitting this over and over again. So that it's like not false confidence. I know when I get here and I can get there that I'm doing this.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it does not get a whole lot better than this. Yeah. By now, it should be abundantly clear.
Abundantly clear.
That when it comes to maybe the most difficult mental and physical sport on the face of the earth, the same skills that allow a guy like Basil to be composed under pressure, to use adversity to his advantage, to carry out the values of the people that he cares about and create a legacy, are the same skills that you can use to make the most of whatever happens to you in life and be at your best more consistently. That being said, before we sign off, is there anything you want to plug? Somewhere they can find you on the internet?
Any sponsors or anything like that?
Shout out to Sheath Underwear. Always great, consistent sponsor. Shout out to, shout out to the UFC for being the best organization in the world. And shout out to you guys for having a great podcast. And follow me on Instagram, Basil_Badre, Basil_Badr. Said it in English and Arabic.
Here we go.
There you go, sir.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you. Thanks again to Barwis, Bulls Training Center in Englewood. And as always, if you want to support the channel in a no-cost way to you, make sure to like, subscribe. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you next week.
Love y'all. Peace.